The Linux Link Tech Show.
The Linux Link Tech Show
is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Take it away.
More fun with Dan. Dan, I walk in and Dan's like sitting by the desk. He's got this laptop cracked open.
And the 14-inch PowerBook is in pieces all over the desk.
Screws everywhere and parts 12 everywhere.
12-inch. Whoever Dan, designed that should be shot.
Dan, we got to do a show in like 10 minutes. What?
What did Alan say? Lift off the keyboard, then remove the 13 screws underneath. Which way went? Four are one size, five are another size, and two are just completely different sizes.
The hilarious part was you had them mostly all removed before we got to that point.
What?
You had them mostly all removed before we got to that point.
It was, and I got, they threw a DVD in there that was all scratched up, and now the damn thing won't come out because it's one of those slot-loading DVD.
There's no ejector.
You press the eject button, you hear it try and come out, and it's banging against something.
There's no, like, emergency little hole to pop, like a paper clip
in? No, it will not pop out. Or, I don't know, you can't see because if you look on the side of this thing, this is where it is. Apple didn't think that you'd actually need something like that,
wow,
I guess.
Wow, that's really superior product, man, if I've ever seen one.
So, you know, and to even get at the CD-ROM drive, DVD drive, you got to disassemble the entire thing.
Have you tried, like, just, like, banging it? Not banging it, but, you know, like, shaking it real hard?
Yeah, I did. I tried blowing in it. I tried, you know, sticking something blowing in it to help it pull out a little bit. You can hear it start to eject, and
people
then it
with
hits something
get personal
and
with them.
Goes back in. You know, sometimes
Apple.
I just, you know, and the screws. I mean, you got screws of like five different size screws. You got to disassemble. There's thousands of them, and then there's one that you need an Allen wrench for. Two of them at the top. It's like, oh goodness gracious!
Hex wrench.
So I got it all back together. But I have two screws left over, I think.
It's always like that. You always have extra pieces lying around.
And at this point, I don't know whether I want to take the time to disassemble it again. It's a lot of work. It is such a freaking headache. And you know what? You can't see it in here.
Try a butter knife.
Get a putty knife from
I thought about
Depot.
That.
Well, no, because I've read that on you know, if it gets stuck in the Mac Mini. That people have done that. You very lightly try to get a butter knife in there and sort of like try to pull the CD with it. You can ruin the CD with it, but there's enough of that little serrated edges that sometimes you can grab onto the CD and pull.
Oh, you got an Infonomicon t-shirt? You suck, man.
Yeah, well, I sent him a
news
tech show.
You need, like it or not.
Tech show t-shirt. I guess I should probably pull Link on here.
Might be a good idea.
Yeah, to hear how bad it sounds on there tonight.
I don't know. Dan switched over to using the...
Link is hiding at home this
AIX com you're using now for the soft phone, for the ASRIC server.
Oh, I got X10.
And it seems that only Dan is heard. Everybody else is like completely...
No, that was the same thing with Skype.
No, I think...
You are currently the only person in this conference.
No Link.
But I think we played around with some of the monitors earlier, and I think we may get better. I think.
Okay.
Is that what
or
you think?
Maybe not. I don't know. How do we sound?
You sound like you're talking.
Okay.
Sounds well, like crap.
That's about as best we can get for right now.
I don't know.
So what happened over there? I missed all the chatter before I got on here.
Oh, the joy of watching Dan disassemble his PowerBook. It's great.
Did he use a hammer?
I think he was getting ready to.
Because, hey, it's a superior product, right?
Absolutely.
So how you doing, Link?
Good. They're saying I'm quiet, though, so I'm going to turn myself up a little bit. You guys tell me if I'm getting a little loud.
How's the weather, by the way?
here, nice and clear.
That's good news.
Colder than hell.
Link lives about 3 miles away from me. And Alan was probably about 3 miles in the other direction.
Yeah, we saw
how'd that sound, guys? Am I a little hotter now?
You sound fine, man.
Yeah, I boosted you a little bit on the board here as well.
Is it bad when it doesn't turn on?
Probably.
Yeah. So Dan, you got this computer sitting on your desk. What is this?
It's my Arch box.
Is it? What is it, like an old testing box you got?
It's a P3 with 256 megs of RAM. Let me...
How fast? 500? 600?
533, I think it
is. And you got XFCE as your desktop. Looks nice, man.
Yeah, check it out. Alan,
and this is
the
video.
White cord? What'd you do with the white cord?
The white cord?
Yeah, the white speaker cord. I'll play you a movie. Not that anybody else can hear it when we do it.
What kind of movie?
It's a... I'll tell you...
This is the video portion of the podcast that no one can
see. Everybody's looking. I wanted to test Arch out, and I had this machine, so I figured I'd give it a shot. This is a P3 500 and some megahertz processor. I forget what it is. 500 and some.
So it's an old machine.
Yeah, it's a little old. And the Arch install took... It was pretty fast.
Once you got past the issue with Grub.
Well, it was pretty fast, and then with the... 20 minutes or so, I think it was.
See, I never used Grub. I just went with Lilo, and I didn't have any problems.
Well, I had a problem getting any bootloader to work on here. I had to go through the setup. Once I had it all installed, I went and it booted. It wouldn't find any boot sector, or it wouldn't find. It wasn't able to boot off the hard drive, so I booted back into the CD. I tried passing the root partition thing. That never worked for some. Well, when you Grub, and I tried changing it to the root partition. Where it says in the documentation, that would still never boot off the hard drive. So after the third time of re-going through and setting everything up, I said, I'll just F-disk it and set the bootable flag.
Right.
And I never set the bootable flag on any other distribution.
This is Arch, man. You got to do everything.
But if I on that system right there, I don't have a bootable flag set on my partition.
And it picked it up.
And it picked it up. And I never had that problem before. And once I did that...
What I didn't understand about your post, Dan, is because I always set the bootable partition.
So do I.
I never do that. It says DOS won't be able to boot this if you don't have a bootable partition. Boot flag on a partition. I'm so screwed. I never do that. But once I did that, I got in there. Then I updated stuff. And I updated to the most current packages. And then I threw some other software in here. Pac-Man made it pretty damn easy.
So you're going to fire up BenPlayer right now.
This is... This is the X-Men 3 trailer.
In full screen.
Full screen. This was the smoothest
good movie,
install.
By the way.
X-Men 3 hasn't been out yet.
No, that not.
Talk about X-Men 1 and
that's
2.
Not the one I'm thinking of. What's the one I'm thinking of? The one that just came out Tuesday.
Fantastic Four.
That's it. That's a good movie, yeah.
I haven't seen that one yet. But, you know.
That's really good. You'll like that, Dan.
I was pleasantly surprised with how easy this was.
Looks awesome, man. It's nice and smooth.
The video stuff installed, and I would love to have it on my main workstation. I am just holding off a little bit until I... that's our guest, I think. I'm just holding off until I get my DVD done, which I haven't done any work on. So that is...
Looks good, man.
Video full screen. What's even cooler... is I have MAME on here. I'm doing MAME at full screen with my keypad. So I got a nice little arcade, which gets me really psyched to get a better system and get Myth going so I can take this stuff downstairs. And what are we playing here? This is...
Konami, 1987.
This is Contra.
Oh, cool.
So I got, full screen MAME. Runs beautifully, no hiccups whatsoever.
Nice and smooth, man.
Yeah, it's great. I'm having
good.
A blast.
And of course, you own all those ROMs, right?
Yes, I personally purchased all these ROMs. These were all the ROMs I had growing up as a kid. We used to own an arcade.
You got the 500-pound box in the corner, right?
Yes, I would not advocate.
I still want a 500-pound box in the corner like that.
I do not advocate stealing any ROMs, but it's cool. MAME rocks.
Well, I've got plans for the arcade case on it. And what I want to do is actually put a MAME box together. That may be a project for next year.
So what you're
going to
do
is
you're going to consolidate all your arcade games that you purchased.
Just like the one they have at Costco. Just like the one they have at Costco to play 70. I'm going to do it myself.
There you go. Cool. But instead of having those 70 consoles hooked up like you do, because it must be a pain to drag those big things out.
It's a lot of electricity, so that's why I want to just put it all into one.
You have your own hydraulic lift?
Yeah. So it's called four guys pulling it down in the basement.
Speaking of that stuff, you know, there is a program called Xstella out there that will let you run Atari ROMs.
Stella's like good.
Atari 2600.
Stella's great, man. I enjoy
that. That's a really good program, too.
I played that. Man, it's going back to some of those games. Woo!
It's tough.
8-bits.
Yeah, the one thing I don't have, because I do have MAME running as well on it, but I don't have a key. I don't have a gamepad for it. I really have to invest in one.
I got one pretty cheap, man. I got this USB one. It's pretty nice. It works pretty well in KDE.
I got to invest in one because it is sort of needed if you're going to play games.
I've had this for like 8 years, and I've never hooked it up to any of my Linux boxes. And I don't have a game port on my main machine because it's the integrated AC97. So that's one of the other reasons of setting this up. It has a game port on it. And, man... It's a lot easier playing MAME with a gamepad as opposed to
holding down the control key and hitting the space bar a bunch of times. It just doesn't work after a while.
And the mouse is a pain in the ass.
Mouse and MAME?
Does it do it with mouse? It's keys only, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then like if you have a game that uses more than just the jump and run or whatever it is, mm-hmm. trying to figure out what all the other keys are and use them is a pain. You know what? I love when you get the ROM and you start it up and it charges you 2 quarters. So you have to press the F5 key twice to put in 1 credit. Like they still rob you. Even over here at home, they still rob you, those bastards.
Well, that's because when you put your own machine together, you can actually buy a coin box and they're not really expensive on it. So you can actually charge yourself to play the games.
I wouldn't have that. So you like an Arch, huh?
Yeah, I do. I like it very much. I hear a lot of people are concerned about it. Not concerned, I guess. Not, there's like they're in the process of switching over to UDEV. If I'm not mistaken, that's been causing a lot of hair pulling.
It's a real homebrew type community, Arch Linux. The people there, it's a small user base. Everybody's involved in development and package management. The package management forums are really busy. People are constantly, you know, creating packages and build instructions. And it's pretty cool, man. I've been lurking around on the boards for the last, like, week or so. And it seems real cool, man. I see Judlin on there and Snark out on there. You know, some of our listeners. And I'm liking it. I just picked up a laptop and actually bought 2 laptops at Walmart. Because I thought the first one I wasn't going to get, so I ordered a second one, a different one. And depending upon which one I keep, I'm thinking of putting Arch Linux on there, man. You know, I have it on a spare drive on my main box, and I like it on there, so I'm thinking of doing it on the laptop. You know, it's a little more overhead setting it up, you know, doing everything, you know, configuring everything manually, but once you get it up and running, it's pretty nice, man, and upgrading is really easy. Like, on the test box, I went from KDE 3.4.3 to 3.5, you know, recently, this past week, and no hiccups, burps, and nothing, man. Real easy upgrade.
Oh, and one thing I want to say, in conjunction with the game, with MAME, I want to... Wow, listen to Link breathe it over there.
We got a heavy breather.
Oh, that's sorry. Not me, guys.
Oh, that's our guest.
Is that Greg?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. We'll get to you right in just a minute, Greg. What I want to say is, this week I also purchased Neverwinter Nights.
That's a cool game.
Role-playing game, which runs on Linux. They have a Linux client for it. Really fun game if you're into role-playing games. Last one I played was Baldur's Gate, which is going back a long time ago. This is set in the... what is it? I forget which world in the old D&D. I think it was D&D version 2.
Advanced
D&D version 2 or 3. I forget which it was. It's a fun game. Sucks up a whole lot of time. A
lot of time, man.
Whole lot of time. You can get the Platinum Edition, which is the second last release. The Platinum Edition has Shadows and Tides additional modules that go with it. Now, they just came out with the Diamond Edition, which has 4 additional modules with it. It's like 30-some bucks you can get it for. And, again, it runs natively under Linux. You can get a client. What you want to do, though... Before, you know, when you go to... It doesn't come with a client on the CD on the CDs. Well, there is a client on there, but you don't want to follow the directions on Biohazard's website. You want to go right to the forums. Go right to the forums and start reading the forums about how to actually install this. Some guy wrote a script that makes install really painless, and it runs pretty well. What I have to say, though, it's great that Biohazard... and Atari released a Linux client for it. It would be nicer if it was easier to install. It's a pain in it because you have to unzip the data files from the CDs. You have to do all sorts of things to get this thing installed. It's not really hard, but it's just long and convoluted.
Tedious.
Yeah, and tedious. And it'd be nice if they would have made it a little easier. It'd be nice if you could also maybe run it from the CD instead of having to suck up like 3 gigs worth of space on one of your hard drives. Now for the bad news. Neverwinter Nights 2 is coming out, but they're only releasing it for Windows. There is a forum posting that you can go to say that you want a Linux client. I encourage you to do that.
Got a link?
Yes, I do. I had tinyurl'd it right here. I put it in the chat. It's tinyurl.com/7EKFT. Go there. Tell them that you want a Linux client. You'll purchase the Linux client. This was brought up on Games and More Entertainment Radio two shows ago and last show. Really, there's a huge Linux base out there that is really into gaming. I hear, and to echo what they were saying, I hear it time and again. People are saying, I love to run Linux. I still have to keep Windows around because that's what I run my games in. And if you port your games over to Linux, if you make Linux native clients, people will buy them.
Yep, spend the money.
They will.
Show your support. Let the game developers know that, you know, we're a community, we're gamers, and we're willing to spend money for the right product.
Yeah, you can definitely... People will buy the games. Again, like I said, I reiterate, a lot of these people, these gamers, these hardcore gamers, the people that are buying the games, are already running Linux, and most of them are running Linux a lot of the time, and they only boot into Windows to play the games.
That's it.
The target audience is out there. You know, and Mac people, too. That forum is also, you know, they have the OS X. Neverwinter Nights runs on OS X. They're not going to release an OS X client. And again, it would be nice if they released a cross-platform, OS X, Linux, Windows, all three of those, just like they do in the past. Some company has to stand up, you know, and really take the ball and run with it, because there is a lot of potential out there.
Alrighty then. Well, let's get to our guests.
Let's do that. We have...
Greg Mancusi-Ungaro from Novell. Hello, Greg. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
Excellent.
Thank you for coming on our show tonight.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm excited. I'm a Novell admin going on 6 years where I work, working with Novell and NetWare. Got some pretty solid products there.
Well, we've got some great customers, and the customers always help us build better products. They've got demands and... requirements, and we try to meet them.
Excellent.
So how's OpenSUSE going now? It's been a few months now, right?
Yes, it has. We launched the project in early August, and we launched it at Linux World. It's great fanfare. We delivered SUSE Linux 10.0 to the market, having had the benefit of 40,000 pre-release installations and about 750 submitted bugs from the community, which were addressed as we brought the product out. The product shipped in early October, and we have over 450,000 people who've installed it already.
That's pretty good.
We're very excited about those numbers. In fact, the current installation rates that we can verify suggest to us that about every 11 seconds on average, somebody installs a SUSE Linux 10.0.
Now, are you guys going to what, kind of like what Red Hat does with Fedora? You have like every 6 months a snapshot release?
We do more than just make a snapshot release. One of the challenges with many of the community distributions is that the stuff never really gets finished. The OpenSUSE project has made one of its central tenets the idea that we want to create a version of Linux that can really be deployed by non-technical users. And when you sign up to do that, you have to bring the product to a higher level of quality than many of the technical distributions of Linux ever attain. So, for example, usability and desktop usability are a huge part of what we do in the OpenSUSE project, as well as bringing together lots of different packages.
Speaking of usability, I just got the Linux Journal for January, and I saw that Nat Friedman had written an article about usability, and that you guys had done some very in-depth studies on usability and analysis, correct?
That's right. We spent a year, we've spent much more than a year, but recently Novell contributed to the open source community a year of usability testing, test results. We uploaded those to a new website, which you can access by going to betterdesktop.opensuse.org. There are literally hundreds of video tests and paper written test results that have been presented for the community, for any engineer working on any Linux product or really any software application, be it Linux or otherwise, can see how usability influences design and can also start to gain an appreciation and a personal understanding about which UI gestures are most prevalent in the user community that they're targeting. It's very exciting work.
Now, one of the funny things about the article, Matt mentions that you guys have a soundproof booth to watch the user going through the study, you know, in order to keep the developer from screaming, watching the people trying to use their product.
Oh, yes, it's to keep the sound in. When you're there and you're all muttering and praying, saying, you know, push the icon, push the blue icon, look at the blue icon. Of course, the user might or might not look at the blue icon. That might not be part of their world. And when it's not, it can be very, very humorous on the other side of the mirror.
So I guess ultimately, you know, the whole object of this is to improve the product and the interface.
Well, I think what Nat says, I think, is really spot on. Linux is historically a community where the engineer is king. The engineer designs what the software is going to be because naturally engineers know best what users need. At Novell, we've tried to turn that concept upside down and try for the first time to develop Linux in the same way that many other consumer-facing or end-user-facing products were developed, which is to involve unknowledgeable users in the early design and evaluation stages of the project to learn from their mistakes how to make our product easier to comprehend and easier to use. So by putting design first, that's what we say. We're going to design the product first, then we're going to build it. It means that you make a different kind of investment early in a project cycle. You do a lot of prototypes, sometimes just on paper, and you have a lot more flexibility and latitude. But once you've got the usability input, you can lock down on designs that you know will be good designs for your customers. It's great.
Now, it seems that Novell is going towards, you know, GNOME. Going back a few weeks ago, there was the whole issue of whether or not SUSE or, you know, Novell were going to be dropping support for KDE and strictly going with GNOME. What was the decision behind that, and what was some of the response that you got from the community?
Well, Novell would love to be able to support, you know, every single desktop graphical interface that there is. We ship 5 of them in SUSE Linux. GNOME and KDE are obviously the most popular interfaces out there. As you probably know, as the whole world knows, Novell needed to do some refocusing of its energies around its enterprise business. And we had to redefine the projects we were working on and ask some people who had been working on projects at Novell to you know, take their leave, which is a very painful process for companies to undergo. Within the desktop space in Linux, we felt the need to send clearer messages to the market about how we were going to organize our default situation. And by choosing GNOME as our default technology, but by continuing to support both GNOME and KDE, we think we send a better signal to the market about how to work with Novell. We used to be in the position where if somebody said, what interface should I design my software for, we would basically say, choose the one you like the best, which isn't really helpful when you're working with partners. All we've tried to do now is clarify it. If a customer comes to us and says, I'm building this great KDE stuff, we say, fabulous. We look forward to having it in our list of supported products. If they say, I'm building great GNOME stuff, we say, fabulous. But if they come to us now and say, I don't know, what should I build for? We give them an answer, and we say, you know, our default is GNOME. So it helps clear up some of our work with partners, and we still continue to ship. We still continue to make investments in KDE and GNOME. All we've really done is clarified what happens to your machine if you don't explicitly choose a GUI. Your machine doesn't hang forever during install waiting for the choice. The machine times out and it installs GNOME.
Now, what had influenced you to go with GNOME again? Because SUSE was largely a KDE Qt-based platform. Was it the fact that you guys had acquired Xeon? Was it that GNOME is maybe perceived more as a business desktop? Was it the usability studies that you did reflected that GNOME was the better choice for your desktop? Because there's a lot of...
Or is it just a toolkit choice?
Yeah, was it a toolkit? Was it a combination of all those? Because time and time again, we see, user preference, user choice awards, and desktop popularity within the Linux community seems to prefer KDE, which, you know, now I see a lot of distributions kind of moving away towards from KDE, particularly business desktops, and focusing more on GNOME.
It's a very challenging space, a space that's full of passion. People who work on GNOME obviously make a big investment in GNOME, and likewise, the wonderful people who work on KDE. And I've used both interfaces. I, for a long time, switched back and forth week in, week out, just to try to make sure that I was up to speed with both interfaces. The market seems to be centering a little bit around GNOME. Red Hat, Sun have done a lot of great GNOME work. And it's one of those things where you want to make sure you're not isolating yourself in the market. We want to continue to do the right thing for customers. We're going to continue to ship both. The change that we've made in our public stance is really a very minor one, I think, over the long haul. Just to say that there isn't this perpetual tie. If you don't have a preference, then we will recommend that and default our desktop to GNOME.
I mean, it for years, SUSE...
You can find people who will...
For years, SUSE...
Say once again, sorry?
I'm sorry. For years, it seems, you know, SUSE was the home of KDE. All the core KDE developers were coming from SUSE. I mean, are those guys still around? Have they moved on?
I think KDE has grown far beyond the set of engineers that are at SUSE Linux. I think if KDE was, if SUSE was the, were the only people contributing to KDE, there wouldn't be much in this conversation at all. I think KDE's got tremendous support from a lot of different user communities. It's very true that for a long time, SUSE was a dominant contributor to KDE and helped build some very, very innovative applications for it. The engineers at SUSE are largely still there. I don't keep tabs on all of them, but we're going to continue to see innovation happening in KDE, just the same way as we'll continue to see innovation happening in GNOME. Both KDE and GNOME are supported by global communities of engineers.
SUSE Enterprise Desktop, focusing on the enterprise. I know that another thing with Novell has been pretty big in the education environment.
Well, Linux, of course, is very popular in education. It's a flexible OS. It's got great thin client capabilities. And I think particularly in the K through 12 segment, where machines tend to be more highly managed and highly controlled, Linux is really making inroads. Sure, it's a market where we see a lot of success. It's one of the early adopter markets for Linux on the desktop. Within the enterprise, adoption's happening in a kind of different model. The low-hanging fruit, the popular desktops to deploy Linux on, are actually machines that you might not recognize as desktops within most corporate environments. These are the machines that are in call centers or behind bank tellers or in nurses' workstations, which are accessing database applications primarily through a terminal emulation window or through a web browser. And these machines get turned on, they run an application all day long. At the end of the day, the machine gets turned off. That's a place where companies more and more are realizing they don't need to pay for the high cost of a Microsoft support contract. They can use Linux on oftentimes thin client or smaller hardware and have exactly the same functionality. The application is the only thing that runs on that computer, but the computer is really just a tool, almost an appliance in that case. Vis-a-vis the general worker desktop, I think there's been some exciting work done by the Open Source Development Lab, OSDL, to try to get their arms around what exactly is happening in enterprises today. What exactly is happening on the desktop? And so they identify some key user segments within businesses. And this study, this work they've done, has resonated with lots of our customers. So we think it has a lot of validity. Within the business desktop space, they start off with what they call fixed function workers. These are people who just use one application all the time. Then they have a set of people, workers called transactional workers. And they're the bank teller or call center person that I just described, where they're running the call center application or the teller application 90% of the time, and they're also doing a little web browsing and sending emails for the last 10%. Then you get to something called the basic office worker. And this is someone who primarily works in email and web browsing and reads content that they mostly receive via email or off the web. This is a new market. This is a market that Linux has not really embraced, but it's a market that's ready for Linux, and Linux is getting ready to service that market. For power users, and I was listening in to you guys before you started the interview, heavy gamers, power users in business, folks who are downloading the newest versions of applications and sort of stringing them together to create new kinds of implementations, that's a place where Linux still has some growing up to do. Not because the OS isn't a great OS, but because the application support from third parties, the third parties who build the most popular applications. We were talking about a particular game, which of course isn't a business app, but it's the same situation, that was not yet available on Linux, only on Windows. There are hundreds of business applications today that are only available on Windows. Those applications need to come to Linux to help propel Linux into every corner of the enterprise. Certainly Novell, Intel, IBM, Novell, and our major partners are working hard to try to get the top applications delivered for Linux, but that's work that's ongoing.
You having any success in that? So, I mean, like, I would...
Yeah, a year ago, we had a couple dozen applications certified for use with SUSE Linux, and now we have about 1,000 applications certified for use. You can view all these applications at novell.com/partnernet, get a feeling for all the technology providers, all the ISVs who've created applications which work on Linux. We've done a lot of great work there.
But any luck with the Adobes and the what is it, Intuit, with their Quicken software? I mean,
so those are big missing names. We're lucky. Photoshop, of course, is a phenomenally popular program, and we're lucky in the Linux space to have all the hard work that's gone on with the GIMP deliver really an outstanding photo editing application and artist's application to Linux. We see people conversant in both. We see people who've started to use the GIMP. It's a great cross-platform tool. So there's an alternate application available there. For Intuit, honestly, I haven't seen a Linux app yet which has the same sort of brand-generated comfort that Intuit has for end users. So that's still a gap, and it's a gap we're working hard to try to get filled.
Now, those companies, again, Adobe, Intuit, Macromedia is another example. Are they interested in porting their applications over to Linux from your perspective, or are they just still holding off?
Well, it's a chicken-egg thing. My personal opinion is that those applications will come to Linux, but they won't come to Linux because of anything that will happen in North America or EMEA or Europe. They'll come to Linux because of things that will happen in India and China and Peru, Argentina, Brazil, in Thailand and Malaysia, where all of a sudden, literally millions and millions of new desktops will be deployed in the coming years, and businesses will use Linux as their first technology. In those emerging markets, Linux doesn't have to replace Windows. Linux just has to get deployed. And all of a sudden, the key application vendors will say, wow, these markets represent real opportunities for us. We better get our applications ported to Linux. That will then help the industrialized, more established economies where Linux is largely trying to take a sliver of the extent of the established Windows population. I think third world and emerging market deployments will drive the ISPs to solve some of the problems.
I know Novell had an internal drive to migrate over to the Linux desktop. How is that going? I mean,
I'm sorry, you broke up just a little bit there. We're using VoiceOver IP tonight, so sometimes it drops out.
Internally, Novell was migrating to Linux desktop for business users. How did that?
Yes, that's right.
How's that deployment going?
It's going great. Novell, when Novell purchased Zimian, and I came to Novell from Zimian, and when Novell purchased SUSE, they started an initiative to transform Novell into a Linux company that used Linux as its dominant operating system, figuring, I think wisely, that if they couldn't do it, they could never ask a customer to do it. And that program, which is called inside of Novell the Open Desktop Initiative, the ODI, started out with a couple of dozen Novell employees who bravely volunteered to have their machines reformatted. They left the office on Friday Windows users, and they came back on Monday morning, and they were Linux users. And they had a hard time initially. This is a couple years ago. This is OpenOffice 1.1, 1.13. This is the precursor to Novell Linux desktop. This is the old Zimian desktop stuff, some of the SUSE stuff running. We watched carefully and learned a lot from how they were struggling. I'd say right now at Novell, probably two-thirds of the company is using Linux on their desktop, and almost half of the company, I think, is or almost half of that group is using Linux only on their desktop. So we've gotten the basic office workers covered, the transactional workers covered, just as OSDL told us it would be, and our power users are in that segment that aren't quite there yet. I think we will be 100% dual boot sometime in 2006, but don't hold me to it.
Again, with the desktop, and now focusing on the educational desktop, because I have the privilege of working in the K-12 environment, and in conjunction with that, the home user environment, one of the things that I notice that is a barrier to adoption of a Linux desktop is the support for multimedia, specifically video codecs, like Windows Media, Apple's QuickTime codecs, in the desktop environment. Because at where I work, you know, people want to be able to go to a educational website, watch a video that's on there, and right now, under Linux, it's really not legal, unless you're using WinSpire. But I guess under SUSE, you can't do that either.
So, you make an excellent point, and this is a big challenge for Linux, especially when you get into, as you say, the home market and the consumer market. So I'll answer the question a couple of ways. Number one, Novell's focus is on business users. We have a great community release of Linux called SUSE Linux, but our Novell brand, our Novell Linux products, are really targeted for business users. So we don't, I don't say we don't concern ourselves, but the notion of doing stuff that is solely for consumers is lower on our priority list. Having said that, the ability to view web content in all of its forms is a critical component of a business desktop. And to gain access to those codecs, whether they be music playing codecs or video codecs, there's sort of two problems. There's a technology problem and there's a licensing problem. And the legal problem, the licensing problem, is one that we're working diligently to try to overcome. That's sort of a price, that's sort of a buyer-seller kind of situation. Vis-a-vis the technology, we have the best Linux engineers in the world, so getting a technology problem squashed is pretty easy for us. I think in the next generation of desktops that you see come from Novell, I think you'll see real steps taken in getting the codec thing resolved. But until then, you're right. There's not really very many options for the Linux user to play Windows Media formats or QuickTime formats on their Linux box. It's too bad. I mean, it gets into the whole notion of what's the value of containers if the containers aren't open. You can get into the open document format, angle here. But I just hate it when vendors can create and maintain standards to the exclusion of other standards in the market. I mean, I'd love to see OGS become more popular, but you're not finding very many OGS objects on the Internet right now. And, we got some work to do there.
Yeah, unfortunately not. And it's really difficult. Because, like I said, aside from Linspire, I think, right now, we don't have a choice. It's absolutely no.
You're breaking the law if you're playing the codec, basically.
And same with DVD playback. You know, nobody's giving us an option to license, purchase a license to use any software. So it's like, you can't do it.
We do a lot of work with Helix, of course, and Reel, their Reel Player technology. And we're trying to find innovative ways to work together to help solve this problem for users more broadly. But it's a work in progress. Absolutely, it's a work in progress, and it's a big festering thing.
Yeah, we spoke to who was it? We spoke to
Stephen Vaughn Nichols.
Stephen Vaughn Nichols, who said he believes And within the next year, none of that will matter.
He believes that in the next year, none of that will matter?
He said that it will no longer matter about codecs, that companies are going to start using, I guess he was speaking of a different codec or something else, that it's they want you to have their content regardless of what operating system you're using. And he's confident that these issues we're facing now will no longer be a barrier in the next year or so. I was pretty optimistic.
I'm pretty optimistic as well. You know, not long ago, the notion that you could have a freely available operating system or a freely available desktop suite was, you know, heresy. Why would that? How could that ever come to pass? How could people, you know, act so much like a community to make something like that occur? And then how could it ever meet the quality requirements that even the most forgiving end users would accept? And of course, Linux has proven all of those naysayers wrong. I would love to think that in 10 years, the whole notion of having access to high quality computer software, access to the internet, largely goes away, because Linux makes computing much more ubiquitous, much more, we become much more a society of equals than a society of people who have access to digital technologies or computer technologies and those that don't. So I like Stephen. I like Stephen. I like the way he's thinking. You know, whether it's 12 months or 24 months, I largely agree with his position.
Some of our listeners wanted to know, who's going to be the SUSE kernel maintainer?
There's a whole team at SUSE who maintains, who work on maintaining the kernel that SUSE ships. It's a group effort, larger than any one person. We've got a tremendous amount of skill there. I don't think a month ago, a year ago, this week, next week, we'll ever point to one person and say, that's the guy or that's the woman who's doing it. It's a team. There's a group at SUSE that does it, and they do a great job. And, gosh, the kernel that we deliver in our enterprise products, in our community products, it's CGL2O certified, it's EAL 4 plus certified. That team's, you know, we owe a lot to that team.
Novell's really thrown a lot of weight behind Linux, enterprise desktop, and enterprise server. Is there a plan to eventually phase out the existing Novell operating system in favor of using Linux as the core OS and running eDirectory and the suite of Novell applications on top of Linux? Or are they going to maintain the NetWare operating system indefinitely?
So we have a lot of customers who've made big investments in NetWare. And to the extent that those customers choose to stay at their current sort of implementation level, Novell wants to make sure that they stay supported and that their servers continue to run. I mean, hardly a year goes by when we don't hear about some company that was remodeling their data center, and they broke down a wall, and they found out that in a closet that they had been locked and no one had the keys or something like that, were, you know, four servers running NetWare that the company had been depending on. They'd just been running NetWare for 2 years, and nobody knew it because they were in a locked closet. So Novell wants to help that customer succeed. At the same time, Novell is always looking forward, and we have already delivered our entire suite of Novell services in versions that can run on top of the Linux kernel. We did that when we delivered a product called Open Enterprise Server to the market earlier this year. For the first time, Novell customers, really any customer, would have the choice on what platform to deploy their services. They could choose NetWare or they could choose Linux. From that regard, I think that you know, everybody understands, everybody sort of gets the joke that we think Linux is a broadly deployable operating system that, that has a lot of benefits and potential for enterprise customers. At the same time, we know that we have users who continue to rely on our solutions that work on NetWare. We want to help them continue to succeed. But when they're ready to migrate to Linux, Novell's ready to help them get there.
Now, do you guys have a migration tool? Because I know when I've done server upgrades from, you know, just from moving from one moving hardware, migrating a server to new hardware, or going from 6 to 6.5, they've had some really nice utilities that help do that. Is there a utility to take an existing NetWare server and move it over to the Linux open server?
So the OES, the whole concept between OES is to help people with that transition. And we have tools and methodologies that, that help companies go from sort of point A to point B. We know that we can't make you start from scratch, and we don't want customers, our very best customers, to be in that situation. But the answer to your question is yes.
All right. Because I would love to do that. Love to do that.
Yeah, get yourself a copy of OES, and we'll be happy to show you how to do it.
Excellent. I'm going to probably take you up on that offer soon. Because
one of the things that's been very interesting, sorry to jump back to that point, one of the things that really differentiates Novell in the business marketplace, when you look at all the other Linux vendors, is that Novell's got a 20-plus year history helping companies move from one technology platform to another or make different technology platforms work effectively together. It's really a core competency for us. And along the way, Novell's created an ecosystem of literally thousands of Novell partners who can help companies with all of the minutiae that's necessary to sort of grapple with when you move from one OS to another. So whether you're moving from Unix to Linux or from Windows to Linux or from NetWare to Linux, Novell's got the people to help and the methodologies to help companies succeed in that process.
Great. Some of the projects that you guys are working on, one of those, we got to speak with Nat Friedman last year, and when they just announced
Hula
at the Linux World Expo in Boston, I heard when that you guys had stopped working on development of Hula as the company, and I believe the project still exists in the open source community. Have you guys stopped working on Hula or support of Hula? Or is that still...
No, not at all. We think Hula is very exciting stuff, and we continue to work on it. The Hula project, of course, now has a lot of community support and a lot of community interest. And because there's so much valuable work being contributed to the code base by the community, we can look at what we need to provide Hula and tailor our work so that it's more leveraged. Hula's huge. I think Hula's going to be very, very neat.
Now, has anybody started deploying Hula in the corporate environment?
I think the question was, has anybody started to deploy Hula
right.
In a real industrial environment?
Right,
did I get that right?
Yeah, in any environment yet. Has it, other than testing phases? I mean, has there been a lot of interest or anybody taking
a
plunge?
Tremendous amount of interest, but we're still very early in the project. What we have is a lot of unscrubbed code that comes together. I don't think Hula is ready for people to be running their business on it, but I know that Hula has been deployed by many enthusiastic hackers or evaluators trying to figure out what's going on with Hula. It's all there at the hulaproject.org site, ready to be downloaded and reviewed and contributed to.
So what other great projects do we have to look forward to coming from Novell in the future?
So So we're working on a lot of stuff. Beagle is something that we've gotten a lot of interest in.
That's a desktop search, right? Open,
that's a desktop search. That's exactly right. An open source desktop search. I guess Beagle first became sort of notorious because Nat announced Beagle just about 7 hours before Steve Jobs announced that Apple was going to create a desktop search program or application for their OS. So, you know, the idea that, that for the first time Linux was 7 hours ahead of the Mac OS was a great thrill. Beagle has been shipping now since SUSE Linux 9.3. It ships obviously in SUSE Linux 10.0. It will be shipping in the next version of our enterprise desktop. And I think tools like Beagle help change the relationship of end users to their content. No longer do they have to be worried about file trees and where they left stuff. Instead, they can really call up all the pertinent information on their desktop, on their computer, whether it's an image file or an email message or a chat file or a document or a website that was visited. They can organize their work around ideas and concepts rather than around directories, files, and applications. And that's a lot more intuitive for most users. So, you know, no one would, I think, today design from the ground up a system whereby you had to remember where everything was on your computer, what file format it was in, and what application you used to open it. What you want to do is say, show me all the stuff on Orlando, Florida, and find all the stuff on Orlando at your fingertips, no matter where it is on your machine.
I'm curious.
That's the Beagle project, and it's cool.
I'm curious to see what the Windows version is going to look like with their desktop search function. How innovative it's going
to
be.
Have you seen Vista? Have you had a chance to see the Vista code yet?
Not firsthand.
So Microsoft's doing a bunch of road shows, and you should definitely go look at it. I get psyched up when I see it because, honestly, from a pure GUI point of view, I think the next-generation Linux stuff is going to show quite well against Vista with, you know, accelerated user interfaces and a great use of graphics, integrated search. I think you'll go, wow, you know, these things are pretty comparable now. So I'm looking forward to a lot of those Vista reviews, especially as Vista keeps, it seems, sort of slipping out. You know, I think there's a good chance that the next generation Linux software will be in market for many months before Vista actually ships. And it's gonna be an exciting comparison for reviewers and for end users to see how far Linux has come.
I think
good gut check.
I think there's a real opportunity, you know, for Linux with Vista. I mean, Vista keeps getting pushed back further and further, and then when it finally does get released, you know, they're going to come out with a bunch of features and say, this is brand new, you know, how innovative it is. Meanwhile, you know, Linux and open source has been doing it, for years now and months, you know. Everything's out in the open with us, you know. With them, it's very closed door and very quiet, and they don't show it to you until it's actually released.
Well, that's always a challenge. I mean, when you look at the Vista marketing literature, go to the Microsoft site, you'll hear them tout innovations in Vista. You know, for the first time X, for the first time Y, and you know whether you look at the Linux desktop or the Next desktop or the Macintosh desktop, or even the OS 2 desktop, you know, there's a lot of stuff that will be delivered for the Windows platform for the first time, but it's hardly innovative.
The other thing they risk is alienating more people with older hardware. You know, Microsoft is notorious for not making, you know, applications backward compatible with, you know, prior versions. You know, it seems that they're upping the hardware requirements just to get, you know, the desktop running.
Yeah, bring it on, I say. You know, the Vista upgrade question is going to drive more Linux adoptions probably than anything I'll do in marketing over the next year. Because I liken it.
Here's a question for you, though. Do you really think that that's true, given the fact that most of the larger Linux distributions and business Linux distributions like your own are requiring increasing increasing hardware and newer hardware and more RAM, things like that, just to run on your newer releases? Aren't you kind of doing the same thing? I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's certainly true that, you know, if you want to run the highest end stuff, whether it's Windows, Linux, OpenSolaris, or Apple, you're going to buy a pretty beefy box to do it. I think what gets called into question is, what do you really need to run on your desktop when you're in business? And that's where that segmentation I was talking about comes in. I'm going to venture a guess to say I'm probably the oldest person on the call right now.
How old are you?
I'm 47.
Yeah, you're the oldest.
No, Alan's pretty old.
Actually, Alan's, I think, your age, right? How old are you, Alan?
No, I'm 42.
Okay, close.
There you go. So I've got a whole 5 years of watching Family Affair on you.
Buffy.
Buffy and Jody, that's right.
Yes.
And Mr. French.
I do remember that.
So do I, rerun.
Can you name the doll?
No, not off the top of my head.
Oh, Mrs. Beasley.
Mrs. Beasley,
right.
Yes.
There you go, the doll with the big glasses. But in any event, so I was, I witnessed firsthand when I was starting out. I was only three, of course, at the time. But when I started out in the industry, the notion was if you were a sort of general grunt worker, you had a 286 machine. And the really powerful, the real, you know, the heroes of the company, they got 386 machines. And there's always been, in Desktopville, you know, a bifurcated strategy. There's always been a hand-me-down strategy. And I think that what will happen when Vista comes out is there'll be a set of folks who, for one reason or other, say, yep, that's what we're going to use for this set of users. But for the folks who want to have this rich experience, these great tools, but we're not going to buy them new boxes, I think there'll be, for basic office workers, a lot of folks looking at Linux and saying Linux will be great. This has happened before. It happened when Windows came out. You know, the whole notion of what happened to Lotus, great case study, right? Lotus 1-2-3, 90%+ market share. When Windows came out, Lotus shipped a version of 1-2-3 for Windows, but because it was a new platform requiring lots of retraining, customers said, wait, I don't have to choose Lotus. I can choose any spreadsheet because no matter which one I choose, it's going to require training. I think the same kinds of evaluations are going to happen around Vista. Do I think that you know, Linux is going to capture 90% of the Windows market in 2008? No, not at all. Do I think that it's going to get a nice bite, though, because there'll be a large percentage of customers who say, you know, this Linux stuff does everything I need it to do for my business, so I'm going to save the money and go for it? I think, yeah. I think you will see the numbers pop a little bit because of the migration effect of Vista.
Yeah, I mean, look at Mozilla Firefox. The latest numbers, they claim that's at around 8%, you know. I think it's much higher than that, honestly. Most people I know have all migrated to Firefox.
Yes, but you see, you don't know the people. You don't know the people that matter anymore. It's like when you go to what's a good example of this? There's so many people who use computers all around America. Let's say just in the U.S.
Even Windows users that I know, you know, I try to steer them towards Firefox. Because it's a better product, it's more features, and it's safer to use.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to just venture to say you know a lot of technical people.
Yeah.
Because you're a technical guy. But the folks who buy their Gateway or their Dell or get their compact computer for Christmas, right, there's a whole lot of those people, and they don't use Firefox. In fact, I would say that when you talk about qualifying end users, desktop users, one of the great litmus tests that I try to use when I'm trying to gauge how technical a person is I ask the following question. Have you ever installed a program on your computer? And most people will say, no. I got my computer in a box. I took it out. I put the green plug in the green hole and the red plug in the red hole, and I put the monitor on my desk, and I turned it on, and I connected the Internet, and zowie, I was done. And 3 years later, it was time to get a new computer, so I gave that computer to my church, and I got a new box with a new plug with a red hole and a red plug. People, you know, a huge swath of people have absolutely no interaction with what's going on inside their computer. They use the programs, they use the interface, they're happy with the set of applications that are integrated and stabilized, but they're not installing stuff, they're not changing stuff, they're not upgrading stuff at all. There's a lot of those folks out there.
I mean, Novell has, you know, a very, very fine idea of who their market is. For Linux to really make the inroad that it really needs to make, it has to come pre-installed on the machine that mom and pop will buy at Best Buy or, you know, Circuit City or wherever.
So I agree with that. And as I think I mentioned earlier in the call, I think where you're going to see that happen most is outside of the more established technology markets. I think that when you hear about machines going into Argentina, Peru, Brazil, you're going to see huge numbers of Linux machines. China recently made a commitment to get most of its government off of pirated software. So it's planning to deploy literally millions of Linux machines into government over the next few years. So you're going to see these sort of greenfield, big opportunities for Linux to go in. Not necessarily, you know, your mother, your father, your uncle, your aunt here in the United States. Where Linux is going to have, the desktop Linux especially, is going to have the greatest success over the next 2 or 3 years, I think, will be in emerging markets. Outside of North America, outside of Western Europe, outside of established economies.
So you see it more as like the third-party application developers based in North America are going to have to address the Linux market just for the simple fact that so many people around the world are using it.
Yes, if all of a sudden you've got a billion new computer users in China, they're going to need some way to keep track of their growing wealth, and that's going to, somebody at Intuit is going to say, well, we want to make sure that these new computer users, these Linux users in China, are using Intuit to do that, or Quicken to do that. How do we make that happen? Well, we better do a version of our software for Linux, and along the way, I guess there'll be some North American users who like that too.
That would be
nice.
Really,
so
what sort of inroads is Novell SUSE making towards that? Are you working towards getting your software pre-installed on hardware to send different places? Are you working with any vendors to do that kind of thing?
We've had some tremendous successes working with vendors all around the world, working with Intel, working with Hewlett-Packard, working with Dell, working with IBM. We've had a lot of pre-install programs and pilots that we've participated in. It's still actually quite difficult in the United States to go to a website and order a computer that's got Linux on it. But that's going to change over time.
So it's going to be Asia into Eastern Europe.
Africa,
South and then
America.
The wave's going to roll over eventually
China,
into the
South
United
America.
States.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because even at 42 years old, you probably remember how quickly Europe got to Windows, and how much time it took the United States to basically get to Windows, because there wasn't an established infrastructure of DOS computers everywhere that needed to be replaced with Windows computers. There were no computers before, and the first computers that went in were Windows computers. The same thing's sort of going to happen with Linux, I believe. In areas where there are no computers today, there'll be Linux computers tomorrow. And when you don't have to deal with replacing technologies, and a couple of things happen that are great. First of all, you don't get used to the list of applications that ran on the old platform, and you wonder where they are in the new one. You avoid the sort of constant irritation of, gee, my application isn't here yet, because you never had it before. You basically, you got a computer that browses the Internet, does great email, builds super, you know, wonderful Office documents, and you're real happy. So I do think it's going to be those economies that will have the greatest impact on the Linux desktop over the next 3 to 4 years.
You know, and those countries, those economies, we are, American corporations are farming a lot of work out to them and putting their own offices over into those countries. Do you think that, you know, as Linux adoption takes place in those areas, that companies are, you know, American companies are going to say, whoa, look at, you know, here we're using Linux over here. We're saving some money. It's working out pretty well. Let's start deploying that across our American offices. You think that's going to happen?
I think there'll be some of that. I do. I think whether it's seeing firsthand from your own employees in a multinational setting, or whether it's reading about the success that the New Zealand Department of Inland Revenue is going to have deploying Linux desktops across its entire workforce. You know, there's some pretty big headlines coming falling Linux's way. And, you know, unless you live under a rock, it's going to be hard for you to ignore the fact that Linux is really succeeding for a whole lot of computer users.
We just need to get it to succeed a lot more for United States and Western Europe.
Well, it's big in Western Europe. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You go to places like Germany, France, Spain, Italy. You know, Linux is big.
Well, yeah, Linux is big. Linux, you know, it's up into the almost 8% of desktop market share. That's big, you know, in Western Europe. No, it's, you know, when you have to replace something with something else, when you have to do basically an upgrade, all the math changes. You've got a certain percentage of companies who just are never going to do that. Probably a third of the market. You know, probably 5 years from now, 30 or 40% of the market will still be running Windows 2000 or Windows 2003, right? And so that's just a whole segment that you're never going to get to in an upgrade economy. And then the folks who are left, some of them will go right to Vista, some of them will go to Linux, some of them will go to something else, who knows what they'll go to. So when you're in an upgrade economy, the numbers change dramatically, and how you measure success changes dramatically. I'd like to see, our best estimate of Linux desktop penetration globally right now is something on the order of between 3 and 5%, depending upon who you read. I'd love to come back on this call a year from now and say, depending upon who you read, the desktop number is between 8 and 10%. Now, that would be a tremendous, tremendous feather in Linux's cap. I'm not suggesting that a year from now we're going to be at 20% or even 15%. But I do think that we're going to grow faster than the market, and I think that growth is going to be led by the emerging economies.
Greg, we have a couple of lingering questions from the IRC. It's a backpedal for a second. One of the questions was regarding Beagle and whether there's going to be a KDE front end for Beagle, a client front end for Beagle.
You know, I don't know. I know that you can run Beagle on a KDE, as you can run a GNOME application on KDE, so too can you run Beagle in that environment. But I don't know how well, I don't know what the plans are, if anybody in the KDE community is actively trying to build that out. You know, Beagle is a community project, and we welcome contributions and innovations that come from all manner of developers, the code there. If someone in the KDE community wanted to start taking the Beagle code and building a KDE version of it, I think that'd be great. But I don't know what the formal plan is. I'm not really in that project every day.
All right. Another question was, Well, Novell has eDirectory, which is based upon LDAP. The Fedora project has been putting together, working on a directory-based system that was based off of one of Netscape's old directory systems. Is there any plans for Novell to, you know, maybe provide some hooks into that directory, make the, you know, look at what Fedora's doing and, you know, make that product more workable with eDirectory? Or has that just been... Go ahead.
So eDirectory is a phenomenally scalable, very, very reliable extension addition to what you can do with directories. And you're right, it's got a lot of LDAP history in it. I think that Novell and Red Hat both look closely at what each other is doing. eDirectory is a really popular alternate to Microsoft's Active Directory. And folks like to embrace it, and eDirectory likes to be a good player. Remember, Novell's core competency is making our stuff work alongside of lots of different technologies inside an enterprise. You know, at most customers that we encounter, there's Windows, there's Unix, there's Macintosh, there's a growing amount of Linux. You know, everything's represented. To make sense of it, you need a directory that sort of cross all those walls, across all those barriers. So we look at what Red Hat's doing, they're looking at what we're doing, and I'm sure you'll see over time good alignment between directory ideas.
I have a loaded question for you. I don't know if you'll be able to answer this. Novell has long held a strong market with regards to with eDirectory, a directory services environment, and along comes Microsoft's Active Directory as a big challenger to Novell. And for the longest time, Novell has kind of had some dependency upon being able to run on top of Windows. I take it that it seems to me, from my perspective of working with Novell for, you know, 5 or 6 years now, that it just seems that there always seems to be a Microsoft always throws a monkey wrench into the whole mixture there with regards to the Novell client. And there seems to be a lot of breakage when there's an update, or every so often with updates to Microsoft software and Novell services. Have you noticed that too, or has that been a problem?
You know, I came to Novell from Ximian, and so I'm not week in, week out as up to speed on all of the intricacies of, like, the Novell client. But what you talk about is something that's sort of endemic when you're dealing with any proprietary vendor. A proprietary vendor changes things because they think it's a good idea, not necessarily because the market thinks it's a good idea. And they can drop these changes on the market at any time without really considering or sometimes ignoring the impact that the change that they're promoting might have on programs from their competitors. Imagine that. Imagine a proprietary vendor putting out something that worked beautifully for their stuff and not quite so well for their competitors, forcing their competitors to try to, you know, quickly test and bring out new additions. Never happened before in my experience. But I think, you know, that's a problem. One of the beauties of the open source model, the transparency of it, is that today you can actually go to a website, opensuse.org, and you can download the components that will be in a product that Novell will ship to you in a fully supported, guaranteed fashion sometime next year. So instantly, you can, at a moment where you can affect the code, you can say, my stuff isn't running right on this. And you can log your complaint at a time where it can actually have impact in the project. Not everything that we get submitted gets fixed, of course. But the opportunity for people to go in and do that, it changes the rules of the game. The situation you're describing, you know, a new service pack comes out for Windows, and guess what? You know, software, non-Microsoft software that you were depending on doesn't quite work so well anymore. That's one of the things that our transparent model tries to correct through, you know, our whole development behavior. So I probably haven't answered your question about, you know, why doesn't the Novell client work so well with Microsoft Windows 2003 SP2. But I hope I've sort of tried to lay out why I think the open development methodology that Novell and Red Hat and others sort of espouse is going to be better for customers than the proprietary one.
No,
fewer surprises.
No, you did a good job answering my question, better than I thought I would probably get. I mean, another question I was going to ask you is, when are we going to have a fully functional GroupWise client for Linux or Macintosh compared to the Windows client? And I just noticed that there was a release on December 1st of a new client.
There you go.
And I'm excited to check those out.
The other thing that's been very interesting is the Java client and the web client for GroupWise have really, really improved recently. And I think you'll see that sort of that those clients will end up being have much more ubiquity over time. They help solve a lot of problems sort of regardless of where you are on an OS level and offer customers a choice for a consistent client across all their platforms.
Now, I pretty much use the web access client exclusively, and one of the complaints I've heard from people who have migrated from Windows to using Macintosh is that there isn't any notify for the GroupWise client for Mac. And I'm not sure if it's there for Linux. But that notify feature...
Boy, I don't
going.
Even use that. I don't know. I don't know what that is. So,
yeah, basically,
I mean, I use the Java client. I use the Java client on Linux. And it works fine.
Yeah. In a nutshell, what it is, it's a little thing that pops up whenever you get new mail. And it says, hey, you've got new mail. Or a new appointment or something has come in.
Oh, well, you see, I get so much mail that would be like a stupid feature for me.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, some people love that.
Let's see, you think I have new mail? I've been away from my machine for a minute. I think it's likely.
Greg, we got to get cut off of BinRev over here, one of our mirrors.
Oh, someone's pointing at a clock. You guys have all got to be home for supper or something like that?
No, not really. I'm just saying that we are going to lose some of our live audience because we are in a time constraint with one of our mirrors. So I just wanted you to be aware of that. I got to cut them off.
You can still talk.
Yeah, you can still talk as long as you want. I'm not going anywhere.
No, I'm happy to keep the conversation going.
Great. To that end, I have another quick question for you.
Make it quick, because we don't have time for you.
Yeah, get out of here, Dan. It's called the Linux Link Tech Show, Dan. Just remember that. Now, a quick question for you, Greg. I was wondering what the status of your support is for other platforms, other computing platforms like PPC and Spark and things like that.
So, the SUSE Linux Enterprise code base is available on a bunch of platforms. Power, 64-bit stuff, Opteron, Itanium, the classic 32 stuff, the Intel stuff. It's also available all the way up to Z series. I don't believe that we have Spark support out today. I'm not sure what we're saying or doing around that. I think we're pretty happy with where we are platform-wise. We did just open up a project at OpenSUSE.org to bring a real PTC version of SUSE Linux into market. We've got a couple of vendors who are helping us sort of spread the word there, but that's still in its very early stages. As you can probably guess, there are lots of platforms you could deploy for. At a company that just sort of shed 10% of its workforce, we're trying to get the core list done right rather than looking for opportunities to thin out our effort again.
So what's the big problem since you have current support for some of these architectures in your enterprise product to porting those architectures over for use in OpenSUSE? So basically, what I'm getting at. Go ahead.
Well, we've just added PPC, which we didn't have 2 months ago. So that's a new platform. It really has to do with how much community engagement you're going to get on any of the platforms. Novell is in the business of helping to build this community out. There's a bunch of folks who wanted to work on PPC, so we said, God bless you, and let's help you get that done. If, 20 people showed up and said, it's Spark we want to work on, I know we'd find a way to support them. What we choose to deliver and provide Novell backing for in our enterprise world is a very different list. So it's really just a question of how many threads do you want to keep going at any given time. We think with 32-bit, 64-bit, and PPC, we've got the majority of our enthusiasts' community covered.
So when can we expect to see some really good OpenSUSE PPC stuff coming out?
When can you expect to see some good open source stuff for PPC? Is that the question?
No, OpenSUSE for PPC.
Oh, today. Go to the site. Download it. 10.1 alpha is available for PPC, I believe. Is that soon enough?
That's good.
Now we're all happy.
I tried out SUSE 10.1 alpha, and what are the things that really stood out in my mind was it took 5 install CDs just to get everything on there. It seemed to be a lot. I mean, nowadays you can get a one disk install from like Ubuntu or Canonix or some of the other distros. But it seems that with SUSE, they seem to throw everything in the kitchen sink into it. Is that?
Well, let's be careful. I mean, you get a one CD Ubuntu disk, and it just hooks you up to the internet, and you download the packages while you install, right?
Right. Okay,
so, if you want to do a deep install of Ubuntu, you're gonna have to incur the same bandwidth cost that you incurred by downloading the CDs from Novell. I don't personally like our disk layout. I think our CD layout sucks. I'd like to see our basic desktop require the download of no more than sort of 2 CDs at most, so that you sort of take away a lot of that thrash. If you want to download all the development tools, I think then you're on CD number 3. And if you want to download all the server tools, then I think you should be on CDs 4 and 5. But, I'm just one person, and there's a lot of history and processes built up around the way we do things. But I'm with you. I think Novell could do a much better job of making it easy for customers to get the code. And disk layout's just one part of that.
Sounds like you got the right idea. You just got to convince some people over at SUSE to do that.
Well, it's not over at SUSE. It's at Novell. We're one company. It's not like, something strange happens when you... wear a geeko on your head. We're all trying to figure it out. You just gotta, it's a big ship.
How long's it been now since the buying? It's been over a year now, right?
Since we purchased SUSE?
Yeah, how long's it been now?
Almost 2. We announced the deal 2 years ago, and we closed the deal 2 years in January. So the end of the second full year post-acquisition is upon us. In the first year, Novell spent a lot of time bringing the Linux kernel, bringing its services onto the Linux kernel and learning how to do that and learning how to be an open source company. In the second year, we were able to turn our attention to the community and strengthen our efforts in a lot of different projects, things like OASIS, things like the OpenSUSE project. Are just some of the examples of places where we've done some things like OpenOffice. And, of course, we created Hula, and then we created the OpenSUSE project as ways to really start to drive innovation from Novell out into the community. So it's been a good second year for us, Linux-wise. We're on the plan.
Group-wise, one second here. Group-wise was a phenomenal Office e-groupware application that's now been ported over to Linux. One of the things, and this came up on our forum as a question, one of the things that has been really difficult in a business environment, in any environment, is the integration of PDAs with other operating systems, non-Windows operating systems, and non-Exchange servers, groupware-based systems. Being able to sync your Palm to GroupWise has pretty much, you know, there's a product called IntelliSync, and I think that's about the only one that will allow you to do it. But there's nothing on Apple, and there's nothing on Linux to be able to do that. Do you see that something coming to the market or under development to rectify this, or are we just never going to have such technology?
Oh, well, we're certainly going to have a solution for this eventually. Everybody's, Novell included, is adopting sort of the same model when it comes to PDA synchronization, which is you build one, and then you say, okay, now we know how to build one. Let's get some community interest and some vendor interest in building the other ones. So we did Palm at Zimian. We had Palm OS support. I think SUSE has the same Palm OS support, but that doesn't get a lot of PDAs covered. But the toolkit's there. The economies are tough, times are tough, and it's sort of like people voting with their feet. We would welcome supporting community members who wanted to build the PDA conduit for, you pick it, your favorite PDA. We've got the toolkit ready to go. We're just waiting for someone to say, I'm ready to do the work.
So there is a client that will sync between Evolution?
With Evolution, I don't know the GroupWise code base, so on Evolution, you can sync Palm. We use Palm as our test case. You're going to choose one. Which one are you going to choose? Fred's PDA or Palm PDA?
Right. And what I'm saying is that you can sync a Palm with Evolution or with There's another desktop that'll. It's kind of like the Palm desktop. Well, you can sync it with the Linux clients, but will they sync with GroupWise then?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I just don't know.
No problem. We wanted to also throw in there one of our listeners wants to thank you and Novell for opening up SUSE to the open source market with development. He's from Denmark, and they are really excited about that with the Open SUSE project.
We've had such a tremendous response to announcing and then carrying through on creating the Open SUSE project. I get email, the team's gotten emails. Just the other week, I was in Germany, and for the very first time, we had a collective meeting of all of the people who had been the beta testers for Linux for many years. People who, because they're involved in proprietary beta programs, didn't really know each other, and who had sort of one-on-one relationships with various folks inside of SUSE. We had a long, full-day meeting with all the guys in the room, talking not just about the distribution, but about how we wanted to run the project and what their ideas were. And there were some disputes in the room. It was great. We got dressed down a couple times by the community for not going far enough, and in some cases. By having our ideas be too formed before we asked for input, it was a wonderful day. Only good really has come from the move to finally make the development process around SUSE Linux a transparent one. So I thank the Denmark listener for their kind words, and I wish we could have done it sooner.
So now, you were probably using Novell's Enterprise desktop on your machines?
I'm actually running SUSE Linux 10.0 on the machine I'm looking at right now. Yes, I used NLD. I was at Zimian. I used the precursor to that. I used it when it could barely be used. But I'm a Linux guy. I've got my computers. Even my wife is a Linux person now. We made the big migration about 6 months ago.
That's good. And you're probably using GNOME, yes?
I am primarily a GNOME user, though I have both environments installed on my machine. I like to use them both because I encounter customers who use them both, and I like to be able to understand a little bit when they're talking to me about applications. But by and large, I boot GNOME.
Now, are you an Emacs or a VI kind of guy?
That I cannot reveal under pain of death.
I guess that means you're a nano kind of guy.
Nano. Pico.
And edit.
G-edit, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Go G-edit. I have one of my colleagues uses Emacs, and I swear he's able somehow to type faster on Emacs than I think you can on any other application. I don't get it. But happily, there's lots of choices in that particular niche, so I'm not going to worry about it.
I heard somewhere along the line, another rumor, that Novell was working with, I guess, OpenOffice to produce a kind of office-type web-based application that would go in conjunction with their virtual office portal. Is that true? Is there any merit to that?
Boy, I don't know. I have no idea. I didn't know that the OpenOffice project was doing that, that had that sub-project going. That sounds pretty cool. If we are the second largest contributor globally to OpenOffice. So a lot of people don't actually know that Novell is the second largest contributor to that code base behind Sun. So I imagine that if the OpenOffice project is doing it, that someone from Novell is, you know, doing something with it. I didn't know.
Well, I don't know either. I was just I heard that there was something like that going on. And how come OpenOffice isn't listed under the that you gave us that Novell.com partner guide? And I was just looking under here before with regards to Office applications, and I didn't see OpenOffice listed under Office applications.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to find out why that is. Probably because it doesn't come from a corporate entity. And I can tell you why it is, actually. OpenOffice is a component of a Novell product. You won't find GroupWise listed in that list either. You know?
Oh, okay.
So it's a part of the Novell Linux desktop. Nor will you find Firefox, for example, on that list, because it's something that we provide. That list in the partner guide is the stuff that third parties provide that can be used with our desktop or server environments.
Okay.
Almost had me there.
That makes sense why it wouldn't be there. That makes a lot of sense.
Greg, we want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. You know, you've enlightened us and told us, you know, what's Novell up to and things to look forward to. You know, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us in the community.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope we can do this again, maybe do an update in 6 months or a year.
That'd be great.
See who guessed right and who guessed wrong.
We'll have to get together at the Linux World Expo.
Will you be coming up to the Boston show?
We hope to.
Or will you be? That's great. I don't even know where you guys are dialing in from. If you're all virtual, so you're like on five different continents.
No, we're all in Eastern Pennsylvania.
Sorry, where Pennsylvania? You said
Eastern Pennsylvania, Bethlehem, Allentown, Eastern Lehigh Valley.
Oh, okay.
The Lehigh Valley.
Oh, Susquehanna. Isn't that the college near there?
That's a little north of us.
Yeah, we got we got Lafayette College, Moravian,
Lehigh
University.
Oh yeah. Okay. that's not so far from Boston. It's not so far from New York. We should arrange a time to maybe next time not have to fight the phone connection, and I'll sit in the inner sanctum with you, and you can try me with these questions.
You come to my house and sit in my crappy office.
He doesn't know what he's asking.
It's frightening in here.
Just so there's something cool. Something cold in the refrigerator, I'll be there, okay?
We got Stella Artois on tap.
Yeah, on tap.
I can work with that.
That comes in a bottle.
It's not actually on my rider, but I can work with it. Don't worry.
My dog would love you.
All right, guys. Well, look, thank you for the opportunity. I hope I didn't dance around your questions too much. You asked some great ones. And look forward to doing this again.
Oh, you were great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Have a good one. Have a nice holiday.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
I'm going to cut Link off, too, because I'm sick of his attitude. Go ahead, Link.
Go ahead.
Go ahead what? I got nothing.
I'm listening. You got nothing.
Dan's shooting blanks over here.
Dan's wondering whether he's going to tackle his
power. No, you got to fill me in. What was happening that you were taking your laptop apart?
The kids took one of their DVDs that they scratched the hell out of. And my wife put it in the computer because they asked her to put it in, and she didn't realize that they had scratched the hell out of it, and it wasn't playing. And after that, it wouldn't come out. It wouldn't eject. It would try to eject. You'd hear it try to eject. It was like it was bouncing off of something on the inside, and it would just go right back in. So it wouldn't even, you couldn't even see it try to come out.
It's now a paperweight.
Well, yeah, and so I figured the only way I'm going to get this thing out of there is to take it apart, and I didn't realize that taking it apart involved taking the whole thing apart. I mean, you know, like a lot of PC laptops, they have like the CD-ROM drive just pulls right out of the side.
Well, you open up one panel and you can see the whole motherboard.
This, I mean, you had to take all the screws out of the top of the case, you had to get the keyboard off, then you had to disassemble the top of the
because of
the chassis.
Loading, right?
Yeah.
It's because it's an Apple. And it's a superior Apple
product.
Yeah,
and then once you get down there, you can see it, but you can't get the damn thing out because I...
We're missing a screw somewhere.
Somewhere it's screwed
we're missing, in. And I think almost that hinge has to come out because that hinge is holding it down.
Right, and I don't know where the other screw was for that damn hinge.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you had to take the battery out, the memory out, everything out of this thing. Just to get to the slot-loading CD-ROM.
That's how they make them small and thin, man. They jam everything together so that there's no room anyplace.
And now...
It does look quite nice inside once you open it up. I mean, it's very clean.
Yeah,
well, not clean, but clean lines.
It doesn't turn on now for some reason.
I'm really impressed.
I'll tell you, it's a nightmare. It sucks.
I got dibs on the corpse.
It's all yours, man.
I got to take it apart again and put it back together and figure out what the hell I missed.
Speaking of Apple, the Broadcom drivers have been backwards engineered. You hear about that, Dan?
Yeah, I did. I was meaning to get around to trying that, just like I'm meaning to get around to updating this to Breezy Bastard. But
you still wasn't hoary on that.
Yep.
Horny?
No, Warty.
Wow.
Wait, which one's...
It's Warty.
Warty.
Warty was the first
Warty
one.
Warty
Warthog. Warty was...
Yeah. I'm running Warty.
Breezy.
Just got to do that app get...
Horny.
Update. app get, upgrade,
now,
app get.
Here's a question for you, Dan. How come you haven't tried the Slackintosh yet?
Yes.
Light a candle on the Dan's ass.
Because messing around with anything Linux PPC based is a pain in the ass. And, you know, we use this to do the show every week. And I've just been hesitant on messing with something that's functioning.
Like
12-inch laptops before
yeah.
the show starts.
Yeah, but I don't use that anymore. That's the kids use that. So now,
like the Enlightenment desktop that's running the audio for the show.
Yeah. All right, that was something. That was a.
You're never gonna live that down.
That
dude.
Was a little different. But no, this actually we depend on it to record the show. Damn, I'm hungry, man.
Taco Bell?
I had Taco Bell the other day. What am I thinking? I've eaten run too much fast food.
Run through the toilet afterwards.
You know, was it last week that we had said, or am I thinking of talking at work, it would be nice if they opened up a Sonic around here?
That was a while back. We were talking about Sonic.
And I wonder, would they open up? Sonic is kind of outdoor.
Yeah, you see them down south a lot.
Are they?
Yeah, because they come to your car with it.
Right.
Yeah, it's like an old style.
It's,
you know,
the reason why they don't have it up here is because
it's
too cold.
It snows.
Yeah, is it too cold? I don't need that come to my door. Just let me walk in and get it because they're supposed to be phenomenal.
Do we have a White Castle up there, Alan?
I have no clue about that. Yeah.
I heard that we're supposed to get one in Phillipsburg
right?
soon.
Yeah, at the old where the old Linko is there in Alpha.
Is it there now?
No.
Oh.
No, but that's where I heard that it was supposed to go. I don't know whether that's still in the cards or anything.
I was going
to
say, I just drove by there like 2 days ago, and I didn't see anything.
But White Castles and Jack Daniels, not a good combination.
White Castles and anything is not a good combination. Yeah.
But if unless, you have enough Jack Daniels, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Jack and Cokes.
Red Hot Mama and a Slurpee. We haven't had Slurpees in a while. Oh. Maybe I'll have to go to Wawa tonight.
We'll draw straws next week.
So listen, guys.
We'll get them.
What?
Judlin, I believe it was talking about that utility called Wink.
Yes, I've used Wink.
You remember that on the forums?
Obviously, you didn't listen to my
squad.
I've been
using that a lot this week, and that's really, really slick stuff, man.
Yeah, I talked about that on a twat.
Hasn't been released, though, has it?
Yeah, it was.
Wow, does your wife know that? No.
Yeah. that was. I did that on screen capture utilities.
Okay.
Wink is pretty cool. Speaking of twat, it's back up and going today with a tacky. It's going again. There is a new feed, so you're aware of that. Go to the twattech.org website. Make sure you get that feed.
It was down a couple days ago.
It was down over the weekend. There was a hardware failure at the colo, and Droops had a hard time getting them to get the machine back up. But now it is running.
Speaking of which, I got to
think of... What's the URL of the new feed?
You had to
put it in the IRC.
I got to think of a new episode, something to do.
Maybe
I can get Link or Alan to jump on with me.
Say again?
Do a twat episode.
No, not me.
You know what? I would love to do that, but the problem is I'm so damn busy at work anymore that by the time I get home, I can't even look at my computer. You know, so there's like nothing for me to talk about.
You don't have to.
You know. What kind of freaky people I work with or something.
We'll call you on the phone and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we could get the asterisk.
Dan's got the asterisk set up. You don't even have to do the computer. You do it all by phone.
We had an audio file come in this week from Ben, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Was it from Ben?
Well,
hi, this is Ben Stockwell from Air, Massachusetts, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
Thank you, Ben.
Wait, we'll play it again.
This is Ben Stockwell from Air, Massachusetts, and you're.
We'll play it again now.
Hi, this is Ben Stockwell from Air, Massachusetts.
We're gonna do the rap version of it.
Linux Link Tech Show.
If you guys would quit talking over top of it, I wouldn't have to play it three times. Thank you, Ben Stockwell. And apparently, a lot of people really, really enjoyed you reading off their names from the Frapper map. There, Link.
Everybody wants to hear their names.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I think we ought to read some more off tonight. What do you think?
Go right ahead.
What are we up to? Last I saw...
Just to say our hellos?
It was around 250, right?
5.
255?
5 people on the Frapper map.
5?
Just 5. 250.
I'm getting there.
To read off the last
We've
5.
We've capped out. That's our whole audience.
You think?
250 people.
250 indeed, yeah.
They just download every episode 20 times.
Although,
hey, whatever, it doesn't matter.
I gotta say, I thought we had more than 250. I thought it was around 250 last time, but there's a whole bunch of new pictures on here that I've never seen before. I like that one from Randall Reynolds with Darth Vader.
All right, we got We have Annabelle from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, man.
Where's Puerto Rico? Let's find some American people here.
Puerto Ricans, American people.
Puerto Ricans are
Puerto
American.
Rico's in America.
See, you know, the thing with this Frapper map is you have to, like, scroll it, sideways and stuff like that. And every time I try and scroll it so that I can actually see Europe and America, America, like, drops off the side or something like that. It's pretty
nasty. Yeah, there is a way to set that to be the whole map at once, but we have to talk to whoever set it up for us to do that.
That would be Mr.
That was Soruso, no?
Huh?
He set it up.
Oh, wait, I thought it was Pat that set it up.
I didn't set that
I'm
up.
Wrong. Yes.
Yeah, there is a way of setting up for different defaults.
Well, go right ahead, Link. I don't want to cut you off from...
All right. Say hello to Drew from Mercer, Pennsylvania. David Gringas from Naperville, Illinois.
Naperville,
okay. Obi from Austin, Texas. Tom C. from Ocean Springs, Missouri.
James Somebody Evans from Botswana.
Botswana.
Yeah, Southern Africa. Not South Africa.
MWGU from Billings, Montana.
I guess they got Wi-Fi Montana.
Refurbishment from La Mirada, California.
Chris from Krakow.
Krakow. What?
Polski.
Yeah, we got somebody in Krakow, Poland.
From Poland, yeah.
You also got somebody in Madrid, cool. too.
Aaron Linwood from Washington. Lives in the Seattle area. That's pretty cool. You know, Aaron... I said Aaron like four times. It's Eric. I'm sorry. Eric Linwood from Washington, Seattle area. Just wanted to let you know that I think that's cool you're listening because I used to live in Snohomish. Probably nobody knows where that is except for you.
Snohomish?
Snohomish. How long you're out there, Link?
I was out there
for a couple of years.
How'd you like it?
In Snohomish, Washington?
Yeah.
It's beautiful out there. Absolutely beautiful.
My balls are getting pinched by my underwear.
Thanks for sharing, Dan.
Sounds like something you could, you know. Don't they make a cream or something for that, Dan?
I just need Alan to move in.
You're going to have to ask Alan to comfort you.
I have to leave now.
Alan's going to comfort you.
Carl B. from Crystal Lake, Illinois. Jim Ketchum from Berea, Ohio. Patrick from Holly Springs, North Carolina. Who else do we have here? Tech Wizard from... it says Tech Wizard Tony, Alabama. Wolfie from Oklahoma City. How about some European people, huh?
We got more people in Denmark, Holland...
Oh, were you asking us to do that, or are you telling us that's where you're going next?
I'm telling you, damn it. Tipuko, Vasa, something, 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 Finland. Sorry, just butchered the hell out of that one, huh?
Oh, yeah.
He knows who he is.
Don't wave your finger at me, Alan.
Oslo, Norway.
We need that virtual Alan finger.
How is the Alan...
Peter Thorne from Sweden.
How is what?
How is the Alan program running these days?
Mark Waldron from Hucknall, England. Richie in Brighton. Dennis Lauman
it's
from
the, end of the, show.
The Netherlands.
Yeah, I think it's time going.
We're
going to
wrap it up. I don't know. Who do we have next week? I don't have a calendar in front of me. Who do we have?
I didn't know we had a calendar.
I was just saying. I didn't know we had one.
I have a calendar.
Huh?
We got somebody coming on. I haven't looked at it recently, so.
chances are good there'll be somebody talking about something.
We're booked solid until I think the last week in December. There's only a couple more weeks. I know we got the guy from the CEO of Neuros, you know, the audio player. We got him. We got somebody else. You know who we were talking to? Was it the Batch Login project or something? I forget. I'll post it before next week.
Guest calendar. There it is. Paul. Oh, wait. Paul Ferris, head of the Linux Batch Login project.
That's it.
Awesome. That's all you have listed.
And after that, we got the guy from Neuros.
What's Neuro? Oh.
Audio player. They also have a video recorder.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're doing, too. And I don't have any lined up for the last week. Maybe we'll leave that open for ourselves with the bullshit.
Which week is that? Is that
the
week?
Last week of December. The last show in December.
Oh, okay.
That's our holiday.
It's our holiday extravaganza.
Which, by the way, the 21st, I'm not going to be here, so.
Where are you going to be?
Probably drunk at my boss's house.
Cool.
You're going to get a mouthful.
It's the department Christmas party.
He's going to wake up the next morning, his ass is going to hurt.
He'll still be at work.
It's the department Christmas party. All right. I got to log off.
And there, joke like that, Alan, if you woke up the next morning with Vaseline all over your ass, would you tell anybody?
His boss would light him on fire.
like a freaking candle, you know?
There'll be photocopies in the copy room.
Oh, shit. So I guess that's it,
We're going to wrap it up.
Don't forget to
tonight, all.
Register your request for a Linux clan over there. At Atari's forums for the Neverwinter 2.
Yes, and come register on our Frapper website if you haven't already. And order DVDs if you'd like to get a DVD with special secret
sauce.
Yes, and footage, secret footage of Dan before our show.
And Alan. Remember that GIMP picture I made?
Yeah, we have some pictures out there that we are just frightening.
Yeah, but that never went beyond my system. I don't even know if I have that anymore.
What? Which one was that?
Remember that the one where I superimposed my face to that guy that was standing like this, and the guy and you superimposed your face and the guy who was.
Oh man, yeah.
Man, you're so evil, Dan.
That was. That was pretty good.
Dan has a dark side.
A dark, smelly side. I guess we'll wrap it up. This has been episode 113.
Yeah. Play us out, Dan.
I'm working
good night,
on
everybody.
It.
Good night, everyone. See you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
What are you doing?
And, all right, here we go.
Bye-bye.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Are you
you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi. It's over.
That's it. Guess there really won't be a special extended AUG edition this week.
Beat that ass with my tongue brush.
Yeah, we did. To make up for the late start.
It's alright. It wasn't that late. It was like 5 minutes.
Holy moly.
It wasn't as bad as that time you came home drunk and took
the cake.
Came home
drunk. That was last year. What? No, that was our Christmas party last year at work, wasn't it?
It's your birthday.
What's my birthday?
Yeah. You're out of your friends from work. You're loaded. I
didn't think it was it.
5 minutes before the
show started. Oh, look at that, Alan. Look on the chat. Look right there. Who wants to see that? Obviously. He does. You still there, Link?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You dropped off the IRC. No,
only
there,
long
there
enough
you go.
To shut off the log.
Yeah. I wonder how we're doing with space on the colo or the virtual server.
I think we're doing all right.
I haven't looked in a while.
So are we going to do the... Oh, shit. You know what we forgot to tell them about was the BitTorrent shit.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Dang it.
Well, this is still going on, so...
Yeah, for those of them listening to it, how are we going to disseminate the link?
It'll be on the MP3. I guess by then, what does it matter?
Right,
yeah.
Already have it.
Oh, I could have downloaded it with BitTorrent.
Something for next time, I guess.
Or
we could actually post it in the Tech Show weblog. Not that anybody's read anything in there for the last, year.
We can put it in the forum too. Lug meeting next week. A dinner meeting.
Is that what we're going to do?
Yeah, I figured it was a holiday thing,
Sounds good to me.
Are you going to be there, Alan? I hope so,
yeah.
Lug dinner meeting? And Pat's going
to
be there? And Link will be there. Are you going to be here next week, Link?
I plan to. Probably would have come this week, but I got this little cold thing going on. I didn't want to give it to anybody.
Got the AIDS. The heavy
hiv. Something like that. Yeah, got the hiv.
Any suggestions on where to go? Same old?
Why don't we just go to the diner again, yeah.
All right.
They're like pretty accommodating to us, so why not?
People are on the chat are asking, what about BitTorrent? You're going to put out a BitTorrent feed?
Yeah. We're gonna try a BitTorrent feed just for shits and giggles, I guess.
Start it up.
Of course, I can't do that until Dan actually has the file done and uploaded, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, I got to go do the post-processing. Well, and on that note, I'm going to shut it down so I can get that up there and not spend all night doing it.
All right, man.
Hey, you're the best, Link. You're the best.
Nah, you're the best, Dan.
That's Alan's the best.
That's what it is. Alan's the best.
The best, better than all the rest. Krispy Kreme donuts. All right, man. I'm talking to you this week sometime. I'm on the chat or face to face, or
hey,
on the phone. Have a good one.
Good deal.
Link,
yep,
take it
send
easy.
Send me an email. Well, actually, by the time I get up in the morning, I'm sure that the files will be uploaded, and then I can do the BitTorrent.
Oh,
thing
yeah.
Can,
in about an
I'll
hour
put it
or
in
so.
The,
like I said, there's...
in the forums.
I'm not going to make any differentiation between the AUG and the MP3 because there was nothing else to record at the beginning, really. So, well, talk to you then. Should be up in an hour. All right?
Yep.
Peace out.
Good night.
Bye. I didn't hear to hang up. All right, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. Good interview. Bye-bye. At least I think.
No. File not found.
It says we're connected. What do you mean, streaming on what?
Us. Linux Link.
Try it now. Oh.
There we go. Pre-buffering.
Hello, hello.
Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing. Sucks.
We have no clue how this is going to sound tonight because we haven't even done a sound. Then haven't even done our normal sound but check.
We're not going to use AIXCOM, are we?
Dude, I told you. I don't think it's the player as much as it is.
It's a codec, actually.
I don't think it's... We're on the best codec on... Well, second best.
Huh. Well, all I know is last week it sounded like a phone call.
I think we're contending with...
Well, I know we have bandwidth issues. I know that.
Too many people.
But... Actually, I don't think it is streaming yet.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Have you looked at this, Dan, at all?
No.
It's good, man. It's really good art. Good issue, man.
Are we streaming?
No, I don't think so, actually. No, it keeps telling me file the linuxlink.net:8000.
We're not streaming? Testing. Well, I know the volume's going through.
Hello, hello. Yeah, volume's working.
We're not streaming. What do people in the chat say?
linuxlink.net:8000. Okay, I got that much right.
Well, the mic's working. Mix is working. Compressor's working. I see volume jumping up when I talk. Well, your URL, HTT, you got a big P at the
there
end.
There we go. All right, are we getting the tech show?
This is what happens when Dan does surgery on a computer 2 minutes before the show. Literally. It says it's connected to BinRev. says we're on bin res.
Check my spelling.
Okay.
Eyes are going.
Time to get glasses.
Time for bifocals.
Time for bifocals is right. All right, Nan's getting the same thing, so at least I don't feel bad now.
Is anybody on? Is anybody on our regular, our own feed?
I'm trying to get to it. It keeps telling me 404 file not found. It's the same error message you were getting over here.
Yeah, okay, there we go. Try it now. No, don't worry about it, Alan. It'll come on in just a second. Because I'm a douchebag.
You still love me,
man. Yeah, okay, there we go.
Right. So what the hell did you do?
I think I had a slash in there when I shouldn't.
There we go.
We're on! Hooray! No sound check. If you sound like shit, let us know.
Alright.
Seems to work now.
Alright, we're in business.
Seems to work now.
We're gonna fire it up.
What am I doing here?
Start the recording?
Oh, I'm way loud.
Alright, you guys ready?
Let's fire it up, man. Get it going.
Yeah,
really. Get it on.
113, right?
Yes.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Well, the burp sounds alright.